Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jennifer Cook. I'm director of the Africa Program here at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, and I'd like to welcome you here to CSIS and to the CSIS Statesman's Forum. We are very honored and delighted to welcome President Hassan Sheikh Mohamud, President of Somalia, today. As you know, President Hassan Sheikh was elected by members of the Somali Parliament in September 2012. The presidential election was preceded by both the passage of a new constitution and the successful formation of a federal parliament of Somalia, marking the end of Somalia's transitional federal government, which ultimately proved unable to overcome the divisions, factionalism, corruption, and distrust that have plagued Somalia for so long. A number of factors are giving hope that these various challenges can now be overcome. One is that the extremist group Al-Shabaab, which has controlled much of Somali's territory, has been pushed to the margins, thanks in large part to the efforts of African forces from regional states. One is that the new government, although not entirely, although elected through not entirely a democratic process, appears to have much more broad-based support. A third and important one, I think, is the general fatigue of the Somali people with the insecurity, criminality, and uncertainty that has dogged the country for so long. And I think a really real eagerness to kind of write a new chapter and a new story of Somalia that plays to the strengths of the Somali people, their energy, their entrepreneurship, their endurance, and their capacity for lively political debate. And finally, our guest today, Somalia's new president, has a strong reputation for integrity, for vision, and a longstanding and visible commitment to peace and reconciliation in Somalia. The president has been a teacher and an education officer. He was a founder of the Somali Institute of Management and Administration Development that was seeking to build kind of managerial and administrative skills for those who would eventually work to reconcile and reconstruct Somalia. And he's a longtime civil society activist who's focused throughout his life on opening channels of communication and reconciliation within Somalia. This is not to say that the road ahead is an easy one or that success is guaranteed. And I'm sure the president will outline some of the big challenges that lie ahead for Somalia, and we'll certainly get to that in the questions and answers, the things that keep him awake at night. Nonetheless, there are many who are invested in Somalia's success and who are prepared to seize this moment of opportunity and make the most of it. The United States is among them. I think the audience here is among them. We're all hoping and working for Somali's success going forward. This is an important and historic day in U.S.-Somali relations. The president has just come from a meeting with Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, who announced that today that the United States formally recognizes the government of Somalia as a sovereign-to-sovereign partner. So it's a great day, and this is an acknowledgement, I think, of the hard-won progress that has been made to date by Somalis and their African partners and internationally, and most important, of the opportunities and possibilities for partnership that lie ahead. This is a hopeful and optimistic day, and as I say, I think we're all here prepared to try to make the most of it. So we want to congratulate President Hassan Sheikh Mohamud, and we're delighted that he chose CSIS as a venue for his first public speech on his first official visit to the United States. I present President Hassan Sheikh.
Thank you very much. Bismillah. Ladies and gentlemen, it's a great pleasure and honor to stand in front of you today, which is a very turning moment of the history, of the recent history of Somalia and the relationship and the diplomatic relationship between the United States government and the government of Somalia. It's an honor to be here with you today. Let me take the opportunity to thank you, to thank the people and the government of the United States of America for the warm welcome accorded to me and my delegation here in the U.S. I would also like to thank this prestigious institution for inviting me and giving me this opportunity to address the respectable people sitting in front of me. This is the first time that I had the opportunity to address a prestigious institution in the United States of America, and I thank you, CSIS, for giving me that great opportunity. I would like also to thank all of you who spared their time, while I know the value of time here in Washington. Thank you. Before I get into the details, I would like to step back for a moment and briefly mention why I choose to lead Somalia, knowing the challenges ahead. You all agree with me that being a president of a failed nation requires a lot of energy, time, and still you are not sure if you will succeed. However, the greater vision that I have for my country led me to take the challenge, and the fact that if we all avoid, we Somalis, avoid dealing with the realities that are existing in our country, however it is difficult and unbearable, we'll never sure and never sure to be successful. The question is, who will take the challenge and who will lead? Having all this in mind for a long time, I decided to take the challenge, and I decided to stand for Somalia. And taking that decision some time back is what makes me today stand in front of you. I have a vision for Somalia, which is to make Somalia, or sure that Somalia become a peaceful nation on the earth, where all Somalis inside the country and those outside can make contribution to the well-being of their society, giving them the space and the opportunity to do that. I have a dream where all Somali children go to school and be the champions of peace in the future. Our people have suffered a lot, and it is time to bring all the memories where Mogadishu used to be the safest capital in the African continent. I have faith of my people who are entrepreneurs and can come out of the difficult times by encouraging and dignity, by a courage and dignity. Somalis are resilient people, and I have no doubt it is that resilience that allowed them to still survive despite all the odds and the difficult times of the past. Somalia needs a leadership that can understand the issues very well and can transform the vision into a reality. And I'm ready to take that challenge and prove it to be willing to take that challenge. I'm here before you today and understand the importance of addressing you all here in this critical time of our history. My government wants to rebuild Somali state with strong institutions that can deliver services to the people of Somalia. Institutions are the basis of good governance, and in Somalia, there are no institutions, no resources to make institutions easily, and even no capacity in certain areas. So imagine you are asked to start an institution without resource, without people who are capable to manage that institution. Imagine on the higher level you are asked to lead a nation that is dysfunctional at all levels, and that you are asked to lead a people that have a level of mistrust that many other people in the world have not experienced. today. And still you have people who are divided, which sometimes believe that they are better off without institutions, without rule of law, without leaders. Despite all these challenges, my government is laying down the foundations of institutions while encouraging public awareness on the benefit of institutions and the rule of law. Another huge challenge in Somalia is that the fact that there are too many priorities that in the end you could end up having no priority at all if you aim to do all of them. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm very pleased to report that my government has taken many steps to deal with this situation, and as a result, we now have what we called the beginning of the foundations of new beginning, a six-pillar policy framework which guides our priorities. The six-pillar foundation that we believe can put us in the right direction to moving the country from relief to recovery at the initial stage, followed by development. Our priorities are security and stability with credible justice system, rebuilding national economy, peace building with comprehensive reconciliation, strengthening international relations, and encouraging national unity using dialogue. We then thought that these are too many priorities and decided to have three top priorities in the near future, which are security, judiciary system reform, and public finance management reform. These three areas are the top priorities of the six priorities we have. For the last 4 months, we have made significant improvements in many fronts, which include security, financial management, building the foundations of our institutions, confronting with pirates, and many more. However, we are not done with it, as we are fully aware the huge challenges ahead of us. Let me touch what we have done so far. We have a fully functioning lean government, a robust and lively legislature, held down foundations for our institutions. We started implementing good governance and accountability and transparency in the way we govern, and we are accountable, and we proved to be accountable to our people. We have started steps in establishing credible and transparent and accountable public finance systems, collection of taxes as a priority for us, despite the huge challenge of overcoming the culture of not paying taxes for over 20 years. We are embarking on a new vision with new approaches by doing things differently to lay strong foundations of building confidence towards nascent state institutions. Our priorities will remain good governance with credible justice, rebuilding national economy, peace building with comprehensive reconciliation, strengthening international relations, and encouraging national unity using dialogue. Recently, we have successfully negotiated the key ring leaders of the pirates, and has as a result now working. They are now working with the government in order to end piracy. They have handed over a number of people who were detained more than 3 years in Somalia, and those people are now back to their homeland with their families. 120 young boys who used to practice the piracy is now coming to the government and asking the government to support them have a better life than being killed or detained in the high seas of the Indian Ocean and the Red Sea. Our parliament is making history. With 4 months, they had 46 sessions and laid down foundations by establishing 15 subcommittees, who will oversee the work of the government. When MPs return to the work in 6 weeks' time, they have a huge task ahead, which include passing legislations which the government will table as soon as they get back to their work. With regards to the security, our forces and Amazon are making huge progress and capture of Kismayo, Merka, Johar, Wanlawein, Baidawa give us hope that Al-Shabaab is defeated. However, the threats remain the same as they still continue to carry out suicide bomb, roadside bomb, and targeted assassinations and guerrilla urban warfare tactics. In Mogadishu, we have successfully removed 60 checkpoints, and the city is now safer than before. Movement of goods and people are easier than in the last 20 years, more easier than it used to be in the last 20 years. One of our main challenges is to build our security forces, who are now doing good job compared to previously. This is an area we would need the international community's help and assistance. Lack of discipline, limited capacity in command and control, and above all, the arms embargo, the United Nations Security Council arms embargo that was in place on Somalia for 22 years, among the many obstacles that we're facing to build a credible, disciplined, and professional security forces. We have embarked a new initiative of stabilizing the whole country and set up a task force on stabilization, reconciliation, and recovery of newly area. In order for the government to make difference to the lives of the people in all regions, so that the people can see the peace dividend as a reality. In our endeavor, strict public finance management rules were put in place. A regular budget has been placed into the parliament, and the parliament approved that budget for the first time in 20 years. Somalia has a functioning budget now in place. We would also like to begin voluntary repatriation of Somali refugees in neighboring countries, as well as resettlement of IDPs in their areas of regional habitat, provided we succeed to prepare the ground for the returnees. We have seen an increase of people coming back to the country voluntarily. December 26 to January 5, almost 10 days, more than 6,000 people returned to Mogadishu alone through the Mogadishu International Airport. Let alone the more many thousands that are coming through land, and already the signs of returnees are visible in Kismayo, in Baidawa, and in many other places. An average of 1,000 people returning through airplanes, those who can afford to buy tickets, is a significant indicator of how our people are willing to come back. We fully understand the urgent need to taking advantage of the huge security success in the country and the challenges ahead. We have created the environment that is conducive for Somalis to return to their country, and as a result, we have seen people building and renovating their houses, business premises, particularly in Mogadishu, Lido, Jazeera Beach, and most of the hotels in Mogadishu are full of returnees. Our urgent need is to stabilize the whole country and establish administrations to all newly liberated areas in order to provide an environment that is conducive for the local people to choose their own leaders that is accountable to them, empowering the local people to select at this initial stage their local leaders. We need to learn previous mistakes, so our plan is to involve all concerned parties with a view to finding a lasting solution. However, time is of an essence, and we cannot wait for all stabilization process such as reconciling communities, establishing peace committees, engaging with local people, establishing rule of law mechanism, establishing police forces in the area, and establishing local governance that's accountable to the people. But instead, we started using the traditional mechanism of coexistence among our people. Our immediate priority should be establishing temporary administrations that address all those challenges that I mentioned on top, above. Since the country is now moving away from chaos, lawlessness, to an era of peace and stability, it's imperative to find a solution to our young people. Majority of our population are youth, in particularly those that are defecting from Al-Shabaab. We urgently need to implement demobilization, disarmament, and reintegration processes and schemes. This is very important to us in order to deal with the issue of reintegration and providing alternative to the militia other than the violence. We are working for a Somalia that is at peace with itself and at peace with its neighbors and the world at large. Let me conclude that in Somalia there is no silver bullet that can solve all these ills and challenges that are ahead. However, we are very confident that we can overcome all of the challenges that confront us by seizing all the opportunities that exist with courage and pride. We are very much aware of all past mistakes, which we are ready to learn and to move on, as history is good to identify problems in order to devise plans and strategies that are appropriate to help move Somalia forward. 22 years of lack of functioning state institutions and 12 years of transition is enough for us to reclaim our sovereignty, territorial integrity, and our people. We are now ready to lay down strong institutions with good governance. Let us hope for the best, and let us all work together without blame culture in order to bring peace and stability in Somalia. It's possible, and yes, we can do it. I would like to thank again the prestigious institution for inviting me to talk to you, and I also would like to thank all participants for their time, and I hope that I provided you some of the key priorities that my government is working towards bringing peace and stability in Somalia. Last but not the least, today, as my colleague Jennifer has informed you, the United States government have formally recognized Somalia as a government that United States government and the people of United States have always been there in Somalia when we were at the difficult times. Today, if you go to Somalia, in many parts you will see the signs and the symbols of this old relationship. The schools that were built by the Peace Corps in early 60s are still functioning in Somalia. Major other infrastructure that was built by the United States government is still visible in Somalia and in different parts of it, including major ports, major seaports and airports that the people of Somalia are using today. As a natural way, the relationship among nations always, there are ups and downs. But the most important element that I would like to raise today is when the United States government and people stand beside Somalia in the most difficult days, a day where 300,000 Somalis died for starvation, a day where the rest of Somalis were in risk of extinction, a day we can say that Somalia was so close to be wiped out of the globe. That was the time, and that was indeed is the real relationship and the real friendship. American boys and girls in uniform have sacrificed their lives to save Somali lives. The essence of friendship has always been there. But there are always, we have in our society, difficult people who were not always happy with good things, as we have today, the Shabab, who are not happy with good things. But even then, with the problem and the difficulty that has happened in Somalia 20 years back, the United States government and people has never ceased to stay in Somalia and bear the difficulties with the Somali people. United States government is the largest contributor to Somalia in the past 22 years. The limited security forces that we have today is existing with the support of the United States government. So the relationship has always been there, but Somalia was out, and now Somalia is in and is holding that relationship from its part. This morning I met President Obama, and it was very encouraging and moral boosting, his position of supporting Somalia and his commitment and his commitment to see Somalia standing its own feet again as an active member of the world communities. This afternoon, we signed an agreement and renewment of the relationship based on United States government recognizing the Somali government after almost 2 decades. If we all remember President George Bush Sr. in the early 90s when he was sending troops there, in his statement he said, Somalia ceased to exist as a state. Today, President Obama said, Somalia exists as a state. And on that great occasion, I said to him and I said to the Secretary of State today, and I would like to say to you, thank you, America.
Thank you so much. The President will be taking some questions. I'm going to move this back so we can take them seated. Mr. President, thank you so much. We've had many sessions on Somalia over the years. I recognize many in the audience. We've had folks come from Mogadishu talking about the struggle for this many years. As we were talking before this, it's a shame that Senator Feingold, who put so much effort into Somalia over the many years, is not here today, and that Congressman Donald Payne is not here to be with us today. And I know both of those have been such champions, even when Somali was not high on the policy agenda. Let's open for some questions. I maybe want to ask first, since you know the formal recognition and the new partnership means there's big new opportunities for partnership and kind of opens the way for different kind of assistance. And I'm wondering, in your conversations this week, what is it that you're looking most for the United States, not only kind of in terms of what, but the manner that it's delivered? Somalia's in a bit of a conundrum in that you're asserting your sovereignty and you're establishing the role of the state, but still very much dependent on external funding and external military forces. So how is it best that the United States and others who want to see this succeed can approach Somalia? Maybe we'll start with that, and then we'll take a couple at a time, unless you want to take a few more together. Okay.
Thank you, Jennifer. First of all, Somalia has been without a state for 22 years now, and there is a post-conflict history all over the world. There is no one single country in the world that went into a state collapse and then come back by its own without the help or assistance of the international community. In that respect, Somalia is not an exception. We need the support of the international community. We cannot do it alone. So that's one aspect. On the other aspect, Somalia is an exception because there is no history in the world where a country has been without functioning government for 22 years. So in that aspect, we are exception, and we need more input, more support, more attention than the other experiences of post-conflict environment. Coming back to the United States government, well, the Somali government requires the recognition of the world as a to recognize as a legitimate government, functioning government. And for the past 4 months that we were in office, we did a lot of work that brought the attention of the international community to us. And we come up with plans that are convincing. And we made discussions with the world leaders and different countries to show them our blueprint, the way we are going to move forward in the future. This, with the limited achievements that we realized in the ground, put together, make the United States convinced that this is the time to recognize Somalia as a legitimate state in its own territory. Regarding the recognition, it is the base for many programs or money assistances. Somalia was not having access to the international financing institutions. Somalia was not having access to bilateral relations during the 12 years of transition. This is a time that Somalia has knocked those doors, and those doors started opening now. Last week, we met in Mogadishu with the World Bank, and we discussed it extensively on how Somalia can get back to the family of the World Bank. And there are a lot of things that have been put in place, but two major prerequisites was a diplomatic recognition, and the other one was financial issue on how Somalia can address its debt, arrears, and all this. And diplomatic recognition is a base. It proved to be base for Somalia to have an access to the international financing institutions like the World Bank and the IMF, which is very, very important for the reconstruction of Somalia. And today, the recognition that the government of Somalia get from the United States government is a turning point for that. We believe the coming days and weeks you will hear more countries of the world recognizing the Somali government following the steps of the United States government. Besides that, when it comes to United States government, United States was dealing Somalia, supporting Somalia all these long years through intermediary institutions, NGOs, UN agencies, private contractors. This was how United States was supporting Somalia. From today, the United States government will be directly dealing with Somali government. Bilateral agreements will be put in place. We agreed to have technical committees working together on how to reconstruct Somalia and the role that the United States can play that role. And the first and foremost that today we agreed is that United States of America will provide support to Somalia to identify its priorities in the reconstruction and the long-term development. The government of Somalia is now busy on moving the country from relief to recovery, followed by the development. And that final phase, which is development, is what makes very, very useful to the recognition that we receive it today. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. We're going to take three questions at a time, and I'll take one from each. Well, there's maybe four questions at a time if it doesn't tax you
sure.
too much.
Sure.
And so we'll go with the gentleman at the far right.
بسم الله الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على أشرف المرسلين. Mr. President, I greet you.
Thank you.
And we welcome you and we love you.
Thank you.
And indeed, you have already shown us your leadership by being with your people during the difficult times.
Thank you.
You've never been a coward who ran away from the country, but you indeed faced all the problems and you put your life in line. And we appreciate you for that.
Thank you.
Amma ba'd, after that, Mr. President, there are forces that destabilize Somalia. Invisible enemies, and sometimes obvious. So far, I can understand your government is not ready to face that. But diplomatically, what have you done to stop outside forces that destabilize our country? And I sit and listen to your question. Assalamu alaikum.
And please identify yourself before your question. Sorry, I forgot to say that.
My name is Omar Abukar, and I'm Imam at the Ivy City Mosque.
Thank you.
Also lived in Washington for the last 35 years.
Oh, okay.
Thank
this
you.
Is
thank
my
you,
hometown.
Omar.
Okay.
Thank you.
So,
great. Thanks. Thank you. The lady here.
Stella Dawson at Thomson Reuters Foundation. Two questions. Firstly, a World Bank report and a UN report last year said that the prior government, of the funds that were going into the country, about 60 to 70% was going out in corruption. What are you doing to tackle that problem? And specifically, I believe that there was, I'm not quite sure if it's Deloitte, Price Waterhouse was giving some consultancy report on how to make financial reforms. Could you update us on that? And then a slightly different question regarding the rule of law. There have been some very disturbing reports the past month about gang rapes by security officials in Mogadishu of internally displaced women. And in particular, a woman who has been arrested, and now her husband is now also in jail, and a journalist arrested who is attempting to interview her. You have spoken out about rape. What are your actions are you going to take in this case?
Thank you, Jennifer. Good afternoon, Mr. President. Good afternoon. It's a time of a new beginning for my beloved home country, Somalia, and equally to my adopted nation of America that I love. By the way, I was part of the people who went to Somalia, the Operation Restore Hope, which was very successful.
Thank you.
My dream is that, my main concern here is my dream is that Somalia will become America's best friend in the home. And please, next time you talk to our native son, President Obama, tell him not to outsource us to the neighbor countries. It's a darling country in the nation. My question to you is, on behalf of all Somali Americans, not only Somali American Peace Council, how can we help you, Mr. President?
And Mark, there now. Another question.
What was his name?
That's
Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Ali.
Hi, I'm Mark Yarnell with Refugees International. And President Muhammad, thanks very much for being here. My question relates to the what you mentioned regarding the large numbers of displaced who are returning from neighboring countries to Somalia. And while certainly there's there must be a draw to areas where there's increased stability and security, what we're learning is that a large number of Somalis are returning to Somalia because of concerns of abuse and insecurity in Kenya and feeling sort of forced out of the country, especially those who are traveling by land. And certainly the uptick in those returning to Somalia started happening after Kenya made an announcement they were going to not allow urban refugees to live in cities anymore, which then led to increase in arrests. So I'm curious sort of what your engagement is with the Kenyan government to ensure that when Somalis do return, it really is voluntarily and it isn't because of fear of insecurity in Kenya. Thanks.
Thank you, Omar, for your encouraging and nice words. Thank you very much. Regarding the lady, I missed your name. Yes. The World Bank and the UN reports that 60 to 70% of certain families in Somalia, I think, was unaccounted. That's the word they use. The problem of corruption, the question sometimes comes on when you don't have the right instruments and tools in place, how to measure the level of corruption sometimes is very difficult. But no one can deny that when there are no the right tools in place, corruption becomes part of life. So, and that was the case in Somalia. To deal with that, we make one of our top priority, what we call the priority of the priorities, public finance management reform is among the top three. Second to security and judiciary reform is public finance management reform. We started overhauling our financial institutions. We have a new Minister of Finance in place, a new Governor of Central Bank, and a new Accountant General and new Auditor General. Integrity institutions of the state at leadership level, we overhauled it. And we continue that up to the lower level. We make sure that the decision-making positions of these institutions are handled by people who have a credible and track record of decency and honest. Not only that, we have enacted and reviewed the public finance bills in the parliament, and we have a newly reviewed public finance laws in place. However, the issue of capacity is always there. The challenge of capacity limitation has been there and still will remain there. And the capacity of the limitation of the capacity is not only knowing how to write bills or how to do to fill forms in the public finance, but it is the issue of culture. Here we have a culture of impunity, culture that everybody wants to do whatever he wants and nobody goes after him. So the main challenge is that culture, and we need time to change that culture, although we start putting the right people into the right place. For that reason, you have heard that before I came to the office, there was the proposal for a joint financial management board proposed by some international partners, where the Somalis feel that this is not the right tool for that. It was more of control than more of capacity building or institutional building. So when I came into the office, we proposed another mechanism. We call it the Financial Integrity Institutions, FIA. And then the Financial Integrity Institutions, many of our partners, they challenged that this is more focused of control from the Somali side, not from the outside side. So this dialogue was going on for some time, and now we come to the conclusion to establish a third entity, another entity which was, now I can say it's a consensus based both from Somalis and from the international, a special financing facility, SFF. This is an entry mechanism that will be placed in Somalia where the funds from the international community will be channeled through that account. And that account would have a board, mainly Somalis with some internationals, and at different levels, internationals will be part of it. The government of Norway is supporting us in establishing this facility, but the rest of the world is also contributing, including the World Bank, whom we discussed today with the president of the World Bank for this issue when we met his office this morning. So this facility, a special financing facility, will work. Partly, it's a facility that the international community can have a trust on it, and partly, it will facilitate the building of institutional capacity of our public finance management institutions. So in the short term, for the next 1.5 years to 2 years maximum, maybe, we will be using this facility. And there will be an exit strategy whereby this facility will be handing over the work to our financial institutions. And we are targeting after 2 years, there will only be our public finance institutions who will be handling all financial issues of Somalia. So we make a plan to transit from where we are to where we want to reach. So that's how we are going to tackle the corruption. The process of reforming and overhauling includes not only the direct management institutions, but issues like procurement, issues like the all types of necessary legal framework and managerial procedures will be put into place, and these institutions will work through until they get a final endorsement from both the Somali people and the international community. This is one of the aspects that we wanted to tackle and address the issue of corruption. Regarding the rule of law and the rape, the case of rape in Somalia has always been there. It is a very serious problem, and for me, it's one of my priority to eliminate the rape case. And recently, we established a task force that addresses the elimination of the rape. Recently, as you heard, the courts of law in Somalia has sentenced to death a man who raped a very, very young girl of 7 years old, and who publicly admitted that he did this in public. That man was sentenced to death and he was executed. Well, there are so many people who said he was not supposed to execute, but according to the law in Somalia and according to the Sharia that we are applying now, that was the punishment. 7 years old girl, and she is disabled for the rest of her life. And the man has proven to, that was not the only case he did, but in the past, he himself admitted that he did a lot of cases like that. So my government has a zero tolerance on the rape issue. We do not intend to be flexible when it comes to rape. I was there all these long years, and I was one of the people who always tried to facilitate the rape victims and support them. I know how painful it is for the rape victims and the family of the victim, how difficult they face, and how difficult that victim will live for the rest of her life. So at the initial stages and the initial days when I came into the office, it was one of the issues that I picked, shared with the rest of my government, and together we publicly announced that this government has got a zero tolerance for a number of issues. Rape was one of them. Corruption was another one. Targeted assassinations was another one. Impunity, killing someone and moving the streets freely is another one. So the rape is a high priority policy for its elimination in my government. Regarding the journalist, we all have a respect for the journalists and for the media. We believe that the media is the eyes and the ears of the people to know what's going on. But that does not mean that the media people are living above the law. The guy was accused. The police is handling. The court of law is there. We are not Shabab. We do not behead. We do not make extrajudicial acts. But it's going through a legal process. So there is nothing to worry. If he is guilty, he will go to the court of law and he will be sentenced whatever he deserves. If he is not, he will be relieved. Recently, we have an experience where a journalist... Look, the problem we are having is that some of our media people, not all of us, We have been there, and one of the priorities was to make, when I was in office 55 days, I established a task force to investigate 18 journalists that were killed last year in Somalia. We asked them to investigate who killed and why these journalists were killed. So that is the importance that we are giving the well-being of the media people. And we want them to be free and have the opportunity to tell the people what they are supposed to tell, so that the people will be updated. But that does not mean that tainting negatively the image of the public, the image of the government, is not something acceptable to any standards in the world. So there is no threat, there is no, and this is a propaganda. There's no reason why, when we want to protect the media and the media, the people who are involved in the media. But this last night I was interviewed by one of the television CNN, and then, Mr. President, this is a test on you, on how you deal with that journalist. I said, no, it's not on test on how we deal with the journalist, but to us it is a test how do we fulfill the rule of law in Somalia. We believe that no one is above the law, whether he's a journalist, whether he's a human rights activist, and whether he's an ordinary citizen. Citizens are citizens, and they are equal in front of the law, and they all live under the law. So we do not detain unnecessarily, but the police is handling. That's a civil case, and it's going on. And I publicly said to people of Somalia that myself, ministers, parliamentarians, cannot intervene the justice system. So I myself, I cannot do anything when things are going through the process. If there is abuse, there are institutions and there is media that will also mention the wrongdoings. Muhammad Ali, thank you very much for your good and nice words, and I congratulate that you were part of Operation Restore Hope, which is a meaning, which we attach a good sign in our history. When it comes to how can we help you, Mr. President, there are a lot of ways you help it and you can help. Recently in Mogadishu, we decided to establish, for the first time in the history, barracks for our security forces. We have a security forces that have no barracks. They have their gun on their shoulder. And tonight they go to their home and come back tomorrow morning with their gun on the shoulder in the street. So very difficult to distinguish between the genuine soldier and the ghost or Shabab or the tyranny, whatever you call soldier. One can have the uniform easily. So now we decided to establish for the first time 3 barracks and 1 training facility for our security forces. And then that is a part of a bigger project that we want to change the security of Mogadishu in the next 90 days, 1st January to 31st to 31st March. This is an operation that has a security force wing and civilian wing. When it comes to security force, we are located 1,000 soldiers, a force of 1,000 soldiers, equipping them, building these barracks and training facility costs around $6 million. The Somali government has no that money can spare for that purpose, and we need it. Our international partners, is not easy for them, as we rightly say now, to give Somalia millions of dollars and say, use it the way you feel it fit. So we get back to the Somali people and the diaspora, and we ask them to support that endeavor. The responses we are getting are very, very positive. 50% of that funds have already been secured. And soon you will have the fundraising campaigns for the security forces we want to establish. So our security forces can support our diaspora people can support us in that. That's one only. On the other hand, your technical know-how, your expertise is what we need in Somalia. The dilemma we Somalis, both diaspora and those who are inside Somalia, we're facing is that you guys, you are waiting stable Somalia so that you can go back. And Somalia is waiting you to stabilize. So which comes first? This is the dilemma we are having, and I hope you do understand. Regarding the refugees and the returnees, last time when I visited Kenya, I talked to the government of Kenya, and we have a very, very extensive discussion on the refugee issue. The government of Somalia, we want these people to go back to Somalia. But we want them to go back in an orderly manner, not the way they come to the refugee camps. These people, they have a level of service delivery in their camps. We want, when they go back to their home, they have those service deliveries available, comparable service deliveries available at the places where they are going back. If that is not possible, then the people get disappointed and then started coming back to the refugee camps. We don't want to face that dilemma. We discuss it with the government of Kenya on how, and we told them that we need time. We want to take these people back, but we need time, and they agreed. But it happened. Whenever there is a problem in Kenya, the police, the people were feel that they are threatened, and they come back. People are coming back for different reasons, but that's one of the reasons, not all of them. So we are in the process of establishing services available in different districts so that the people can come back to their homeland. We are working that with the international community, and in the next 3 to 6 months, there is a space that people start coming back to their traditional place, not to concentrate again in Mogadishu and major towns where services are available. We want people to go back to their villages and remote areas and to get whatever possible service to those areas. Thank you.
Great. Okay, let's take another round. We'll go with the gentleman here.
Mr. President, welcome. I think we can attribute to the recognition of Somalia by the United States government due to your background for being part of civil society. But thank you very much for your effort.
Thank you.
This is...
What is your name?
My name is Basto Ahmed. Now, you mentioned arms embargo. It's very important and it's very imperative for any nation to secure itself. It is very difficult to have other forces who are not Somali citizens to secure the nation for us. I think that's very difficult. So arms embargo to be lifted, I think that should be a priority for the Somali government. So the question is, as far as the pundits and those who talk about Somalia, their argument is that the Somali armed forces cannot be trusted. What can be done to that? Or is there an evidence to that fact? Thank you.
Thank you. The lady here.
Thank you. My name is Betsy Graves. I'm an analyst with a firm called the Whitaker Group. Your Excellency, thank you and welcome. You. My question is to the role of the private sector. What is your vision for the business environment in Somalia as things continue to grow and to stabilize? What role can both the international business community, but particularly the U.S. private sector, play in this future of Somalia?
Thank you.
Mahed Sinnett, thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer. Mr. President, thank you for being here, and congratulations.
Please,
I don't envy
yourself.
Your task.
Introduce yourself.
My name is Sadia Ali Aden, I went back to Somalia in 2011 to take part in the famine effort to feed the famine victims. I have a twofold question. My first one is, in October, Mary Harber, who wrote the book titled Getting Somalia Wrong, spoke at USIP. And what she said was, the Turkish government and the Turkish people have done amazing job in 1 year, more than what United States and the international community have done in 20 years. What can the United States and international community do to re-engage Somalia and use the Turkish model? Because that was very successful. And the second question is that there is Amisom troops inside Somalia. Each soldier gets paid $2,200. The Somali soldier gets $100. Now I know it was increased to $300. And when they get injured, they're removed from payroll. Is there a way to abandon the new Amisom troops that are coming and redirect or rechannel that funding to pay the Somali soldiers and increase their salary so they can be empowered and defend their people from Shabab and external also forces and secure the Somali sovereignty? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. My name is Mohamed Ademo. I'm a graduate student at Columbia University in New York. My question is, first of all, I wish you well in your country. I hope I'm very much satisfied on your answer about the journalists, but as you know, about 12 journalists has been killed in just the last year and many more over the years, and I hope you continue to do more in terms of protecting the journalists. And as you know, of course, the journalism in Africa is not as developed as in, say, in other parts of the world, but I hope you be more considerate in also building the journalism institution and protecting the journalists. My question is, as you try to build a Somalia that is at peace with itself and also its neighbors, you also know that Somalia does not have a very good history with some of its neighbors, and I'm an Ethiopian journalist, so you sort of know where I'm going with this. So there, as you know, Ethiopia has forces on the ground in your country that is not necessarily part of Amisom in other efforts. And you also know that Al-Shabaab was emboldened in a lot of ways after Ethiopia's foray into your country in 2006. And how are you going to build a national consensus given the history and also the sensitivities that people have towards Ethiopian neighbors, and you also know what is transpiring in Kenya? So if you could talk about those things, I would appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Basto. If I start, the Somali forces cannot be trusted. Well, I would like to say the past, it was not only the Somali forces or troops cannot be trusted, but there are cases where some people argue Somalis cannot be trusted, not only the forces. That has been disproved. You see, our forces, that notion of they cannot be trusted is not true. There is an element of discipline, yes, we do not deny that. But issue of trust and responsibility when it comes, although it has a relationship with the discipline. But what to trust? If you wanted to know where the pipe leaks, you have to put water into the pipe. Then only you can know where the pipe leaks. If nothing has been given to them, how someone claims that they are not trustworthy? When they are given something, then only one can claim they are not trustworthy. So nothing has been given to them. So that was not a fair judgment on saying it's not trustworthy. But it is our responsibility, the Somali government, to make our forces professional security forces, which it's not an issue of trust, not trusting, but with systems and tools in place that can be controlled, everything, so that can prove that nothing has been misused or abused or stolen or whatever. So that's what we are working. And the issue of training and disciplining and making the indoctrination of loyalty to the country is among the challenges that we are facing. So we're working on that, but the issue of they are not trustworthy is not a fair judgment. With the young lady who was asking me about the role of the private sector, Somalia has been surviving for the last 20 years because of the private sector. Imagine if these good Somalis who living here in Washington and who left back members of the family in remote areas of Somalia, if they cannot afford to send $100 at the end of the month. A mother, a grandmother who is living in a remote area, who needs $100 or $50 a month. It's a private companies that make it possible that someone in Washington to send $100 to a remote village, and that person, that recipient, gets that $100 within an hour or even less. It's the private people who make possible that. Somalia today, in the African standards, is one of the best countries when it comes to telecommunication, particularly the mobile phone. That are private people. And by the way, private people and the remittances are the largest employers. So in that remote area, very far from any town or city, the person who is herding the livestock, the cattle or the camel, has a mobile phone today in Somalia. Very, as far as someone can read 1, 2, 3, he uses mobile phone. And that links to, and I believe many of you talk to their family members who are very, very remote parts of Somalia, not necessarily in town. So that is the private company. Today, private companies or private entities, today, the kind of education we have in Somalia is all of it private. Yes, that does not give opportunity to the poor, but at least they are giving opportunity, even those who can pay $10 a month. If all of us, even those who can afford to pay $10, cannot have the opportunity, it would have been different. Today, Somalia has very good number of schools, universities. We have medical graduates who graduate Somali universities and who are today doctors in Somalia. We have engineers who graduated Somali universities. And the person, one of the persons who were proposed to be an accountant general, he was a graduate from Somali University. So these are private. So in our way, in our vision, private-public partnership is the only way out. The Somali government has no capacity. The international community will never come one time. So it's the private who has been. And now today, the biggest projects in Somalia, and now, as of today, is implementing by private companies. There is a private company that is investing $100 million to the reconstruction or reconstitution of the power in Somalia. And when we compare it with another international company who said they will reconstitute the power in Mogadishu 2 years, these guys, they said, we provide power to Mogadishu within 11 months. And they proved that they can do that when we appointed a committee to discuss with them. This is a Somali company, and they are investing $100 million, starting with 50 megawatt power plant in Mogadishu. So the way forward for Somalia is the private and private-public partnership. So it is a choice of the day today. Sadia, thank you very much for the good and generous words that you said. The Turkish model in Somalia is very, very clear, as Sadia said. They said, we want to do this thing in Somalia, and they do it. They don't have the restrictions that many of the Western world has got. They are there, they came there, starting from their top leadership, the prime minister of the country with his family, the rest, the deputy prime minister, ministries. There is a deputy prime minister who comes to Somalia every other month just to monitor and see how the projects are going on. They are building or implementing projects that are really tangible ones, building one of the most modern hospitals in the African continent, as they said, 200-bed hospital with all the necessary facilities of a modern hospital. There is a 100-bed hospital for children only, which is also undergoing. There is another 100-bed hospital for disabled people and the people of have a level of disabilities. These are some of the projects, schools, many other projects are running. They are there. They are doing the work there. They are driving their own cars. They are moving the city. They are building. They are teaching. They are, and there are a number of clinics that provide free service to the people in Mogadishu alone. They are doing the same thing. They started doing the same thing in Puntland and Somaliland. And the good thing that is that they have the minimum casualties. There are only one Turkish guy killed in Mogadishu for the last 2 years. And that man, he was a private man who just went, businessman who just went in no-go areas of the city. Every city has a no-go area. He went to no-go area and unfortunately he was killed. Other than that, there is no any other incident. They drive the ambulances. Today, Mogadishu is cleaner because of the support of the Turkish. They provided the garbage collection tracks and everything, and the city is cleaner today. They are building 23 kilometers of road as a pilot project in Mogadishu. So that's true, and we give that credit to the Turkish. But practices are always different. Procedures and systems are always one of the benefits why the Turkish as that they were not there in Somalia for the last 20 years. So they are not, they have not, their mind has not been shaped by this media and sometimes rumors that Somalia is not safe, Somalia is this, Somalia is that. They are there. And the government people are there, thicker. The government administration agent is there with more. Their embassy is there, ambassador, full fledged staff, military attaché, everybody, commercial attachés are there. While the international and NGOs staff are not there, they all are in Nairobi. When you ask them why don't you go to Mogadishu, Mogadishu is not safe. Why? Because they have good life in Nairobi. Their kids goes to the international school, which is not available in Mogadishu. They drive their own cars. If they go to Mogadishu, they may remain. They might be restricted their movement and all this. So they cannot. Now is the beginning now. That trend is changing now. We have very good offices of United Nations now coming back to Somalia. Many international NGOs are also coming back. Now things are changing, and soon we hope that there will be more of that. Regarding Saadia, the issue of AMISOM and Somalia, yes, AMISOM forces, they did a lot of good work in Somalia. They fought, they died, they injured, wounded in Somalia. A lot of mothers and kids shed tears in Uganda, in Burundi, in Djibouti, in Kenya, because of their beloved ones killed in Somalia. So we give that credit to them. And they deserve to be paid that amount. But what Saadia's stand is true is that the treatment that our boys are receiving is not fair. That's the point. If I take an example, our security forces, they are paid by the internationals, not by the Somali government. we now only starting the payment. For the first time, we paid 1,500 soldiers. We paid their salary. We started out of 17,000. And we want to continue, add 1,000 more, add 1,000 more, and we want to pay them. But still we're paying the same amount, $100. And for those that are supported by the international, it's not salary, it's a stipend. A soldier, from soldier to the highest officer, a general, is paid with $100. There's no, for the first time, our budget 2013, we put these, the budget for the security forces and the salaries based on rank. This is the first time that there is a different payment for the soldier and the officer. Before, it's not, and the practice are still there. They are paid $100 for that. Regarding those who died, still we keep them in the list, so are still they are paid. But that's not enough. We have a lot of orphans for those who have been killed in combat. Their kids are there. We are organizing orphanages and facilities where we take care of those kids. Mahmoud, thank you very much for your position of the issue of our neighbors. We have Djibouti, Ethiopia, and Kenya. Djibouti has always been traditional friend of Somalia. So there has never been a question of relationship or Djibouti. Djibouti, very small country, and they have been with Somalia for all these years. And they have attempted and tried number of times to support Somalia to get back to its... And sometimes they even go into real danger to do that. Kenya, we have a recent history. Our history with Kenya is 50 years old, starting from 1960s, whatever it is. But with Ethiopia, we have a long, long history. Centuries old, 600 years and more. And the history of these 600 years were not very, very beautiful history. A history of conflict, a history of hate, a history of violence, a history of animosity. But today, in the beginning of 21st century, we believe Somalia and Ethiopia are not neighbors by choice. We didn't choose to be the neighbor of Ethiopia. And they didn't choose to be our neighbor either. So we have only one option, to have a very good relationship. Anything other than that will not help. In this 600 years history, it never helped our people, the people of Somalia and the people of Ethiopia. We have allocated a very important resources to build a military might so that we can challenge our neighbor Ethiopia. And they do the same to challenge Somalia, whereby those resources was very, very important and vital for the service delivery of our people, for the betterment of human capital. This is a time we want to begin reversing that history. And yes, some of those problems have been dictated by the history. We all know the history of the 18th century, what happened when it scrambled to Africa, the partition of Africa, the Berlin Conference of 1884, and all this. We know the history. Starting from there, dividing Somalia into different zones of influence, and the Somali government is starting to be there. So that was the history. Now, we want to see it differently. And we want to wear a different lenses to see the world. We cannot go and keep continuing on war. I visited Ethiopia recently, and I presented that vision to the government of Ethiopia, leading by the Prime Minister. And they highly welcomed the idea, and they take further steps to prove that this is what they believe. We have established a joint cooperation committee at ministerial level, who will work issues of interest among our two countries, including the security, the trade, the economic cooperation, and those. Ethiopia is close to 90 million people, landlocked. Somalia is at 10 million people with 3,300 kilometers. the only two permanent rivers we use comes from Ethiopian highlands, and so on. There are so many things that can interlink Somalia and Ethiopia peacefully. And I think there are a lot of opportunities that we can develop our two countries. With this, and imagining the entrepreneurial capacity and character of our society, we think we have better off in a real economic cooperation with Ethiopia. And that is the policy. That is the policy we are seeking. And we hope at least that we will get a positive response from our colleagues in Ethiopia. And so far, the response we are getting is absolutely very, very, very positive. When it comes to Kenya, Kenya is the go-place for Somalis. When our people were threatened, they ran to Kenya. When our business people wanted to make business and they were unable to do it in Somalia, they took their money and come to Kenya and build Kenya. And Kenya is grateful about that. Recently when I visited President Kibaki, was publicly saying that the Somali businessmen, Somali entrepreneurs, they became role model for the Kenyans. And they built part of Kenya. 20 years back, parts of Nairobi was different than they are today. And Somali is not only in BT trade business, but they are in Kenya, they are all sectors of business. And they make a difference. The same Somalis are doing in Juba, Sudan. They are building. So I think they are good in building the country. So soon we will have new islis in Mogadishu and new Juba buildings in Mogadishu. That is the essence and the nature of the entrepreneurial character of our society. If they are offered an opportunity and chance, that's what they can prove. And soon we will see. And that's what I was just recently talking about, someone investing the Somalia of today, $100 million. That's a proof of the capability of our people, and we hope we will use that capability. Thank you.
I see many more hands, but we are unfortunately at time. Mr. President, I want to just thank you for fielding so many questions so eloquently and in such depth. Again, we want to congratulate you. We want to work with you in future. And all of us here, I think, on taking advantage of the opportunity and tapping into that entrepreneurial spirit of the Somali people. Thank you very much, and please join me.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.